Intervju Radija Študent.
Dobro večer, pozdravljeni na frekvenci 89,3 MHz. Radio Študent je tole na zadnji dan starega leta, kjer v RŠ intervju gostimo DJ TLR-a, svojim staršem znanega bolj kot Jeroen van der Star, ki je začel kot organizator skvot zabav 90-ih, imenovanih Global Darkness, in potem še ustanovil web portal Zahodne Nizozemske, ki je služil kot središče elektro scene. Vodi tudi zloglasno založbo Krem Organization, ki ima za sabo več kot 50 izdaj Chicago House, Electro Disco in ostalih elektronskih eklektičnih zvrsti. Vodi pa tudi svojo lastno oddajo Back to Music na Intergalactic FM. Skratka, njegova kombinacija horror soundtrackov in glasbe Itala in eklektičnega poznavanja električne glasbe oziroma elektronske glasbe zadnjih 30 let ga daje vsem vrh gostov za letošnje leto, in pred nastopom v Ljubljanski kleti kluba K4 se bo z nami tudi pogovoril o marsikaterem zanimivem vprašanju sodobne elektronske glasbe tudi danes. Jeroen, hello, how
hey.
Are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
Excellent, with this glass of wine.
Glass of wine. Excellent, getting ready for the New Year's festivities.
Festivities, yeah. And for the New Year in general.
Yeah, that too.
How did you get ready for your label, Krem?
How do I get ready? I didn't.
Yeah. How did it start?
Oh,
tell us something about the history.
Yeah, I was working together with Bunker Records at the time quite closely and doing their website, bunkerrecords.com, and the Global Darkness website. And we did a lot of touring at the time with Legoweld, Org Electronique and Smertslabor from Unit Mobius, mm-hmm. Peter Vaars, the owner of and founder of Bunker Records. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to do something by myself. It was going quite okay, a lot of gigs, and I wanted to put it back into something that was a bit more lasting than a bunch of parties, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was a label.
What kind of music did you listen to at that time and play it out?
At that time, it was lots of, like to say, the classic The Hague electro sound, kind of. The late 90s, well, early 2000s, it was really early 2000s, like to say. It was really around the change of the millennium, so it was at electro sound. And also a lot of disco, Italo, Chicago house classics, because there was no new wave of Chicago house yet, really. Hip-hop, all kinds of things, you know, even punk music still a little bit, it comes in waves with me. I have periods that I listen to certain music a lot.
And this background, you're listening to what from your mix?
Oh, well, actually, this is kind of a transition moment in the mix, but the first track is, I don't know, it's like an unreleased weird thing that DJ Overdose made from the Nova Man, and he bought a new machine and he made two tracks with only sounds from that machine just to try out and see how it worked. And he put it on Bandcamp and I just ripped it from there and put it in the mix, but it's, it was a tryout for a synthesizer.
So in the 90s, before you founded Krem Organization, you were also organizing parties called Global Darkness.
Yeah, but that's where the name comes from, and when we kind of started. Yeah, it's a long history, but let's say in the mid 90s, the first steps into electronic music really for me was like through Jungle.
Jungle.
And we organized parties in squats in Holland, in the West Coast area, like The Hague and Leiden. And yeah, the name Global Darkness was used for one of them, and it kind of stuck.
What, was Jungle big in the in
Holland? No, it was at the time. Well, I don't know, not really. It was kind of underground. It wasn't as big as in, say, the UK or whatever. It was more like, I don't know, alternative is a weird word these days, but it was kind of, we were in a squad scene, so it was more like, so it wasn't commercial mainstream stuff really, but there were a few big DJs that played at big parties sometimes, you know, back in those days.
You played electro, you said you played electro at the time when you founded Krem Organization. Did you play any techno?
I have never, well, no.
Do you have an aversion?
Yes, but no. No, I have no aversion, but I At the time, the techno was popular in my area. Mm-hmm. It was the hard industrial techno, mm-hmm. and I had no connection with that kind of music. It still is like the mythical Acid Planet days in The Hague, you know, those parties. I was there and stuff, but it wasn't my kind of music, and I was never really introduced to the techno classics later on. And then I found that there was a completely different sound to the early Detroit stuff than the really pounding industrial shit that I heard later, and I couldn't connect with, you know, so because I came from more different kind of music. In the 80s I listened to hardcore punk and hip-hop with breakbeats, and that connection with jungle was for me much more obvious than the 4-4, you know.
But at the same time in the 90s, or maybe by the end of the 90s, everything was leaning towards the future. All the music you said.
Yeah,
you
had that was the obsession.
London.
It was, yes.
All
it
the music was about the future. Yes. Just like pointing towards stepping into the new. Also stepping into BPMs.
Yeah, but that vibe was beyond the music, because it was the time that everybody thought the future was bright. It was economic prosperous time. It was the time that the internet started to become big, and you had 2 megabyte flash movies as intros for websites that made shitloads of money, selling basically nothing. Everybody was in this weird bubble. That was part of the whole zeitgeist. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was reflected in the music. It had that. Yeah, it had a weird optimistic future. Everything is gonna, you know, move forward and gonna be better and better and better, which of course it didn't, you know. Also that music became really stagnant.
So
I think,
what has
in the
happened
late 90s,
in these 15 years, you think?
Many things, yeah. The, I don't know, life.
Would you say that the future never happened for those guys? Or would you say that future does not happen for us anymore?
I don't know. That is a really tricky question, because the concept of future is very
abstract and broad.
Yeah, I would say I don't know. That's the easy way out. But I don't think there is such thing as a real. There is a now always. But I don't know. The concept of a past and a future is very. Yeah, it's very strange for me. But I think, I don't know, those guys did what they did, and we do what we do, and in the end it doesn't really matter for the big picture, you know. We all have ideas and stories and try to do something, and it doesn't matter if it comes true or not, because at that moment it is there when you make that, you know. For them it was there at that time.
But something did change. The medium on which DJs play music
Yeah, but the whole landscape changed drastically when the internet matured. I mean, that the last 5 years have been amazing, super big changes. I mean,
I've seen statistics about vinyl getting more, rising in sales in the last few years.
Yeah, I guess that I always hear that, and it's hard for me to measure, but it's doing well. But it also is because the major labels decided they started to press vinyl again of their old classics, so that's a pretty big boost in general of the volume that pressing plants ship, but not necessarily for individual labels, you know. But I do see now the last few years that there is a little bit of a. It's become a bit easier than a few years ago, but again, it's hard to say if that's just because it's going better with us or if that's a general thing, you know?
It could be. Is it easier to release digital than vinyl?
Of course, set aside the financial costs. There's zero overhead, basically. But digital only does not really work without a physical release. Statistically, you know, if you don't have a record out, then it's harder to sell digital only, unless it's an established label, etc. But for like digital only labels, it's much harder.
So the release has to have a palpable.
Yeah, there's somehow that's still
document.
Important, and it's also there's a new generation of kids out there that buy records again, and they make it, of course, like always into something. Mm-hmm. special and it's a status thing, so they want to, you know, they start doing vinyl only parties, kind of as a, you know, it's become a big thing to play with vinyl again, as a kind of well, how do you call that, stance against all the digital overkill, maybe. You know, people always want to distinguish themselves and set them, put themselves in a special position towards others, and vinyl is now one of the means of doing that, because it does require a certain how do you call that,
skill.
Yeah, it's not only a skill, but it has more, you have to be dedicated, and because, you know, it's harder to get, so you can prove that you put in the effort, because basically every track and stuff you can download and it's very simple, but if you have a bunch of records, that means you really have gone out and collected, and, you know.
So it's become...
I'm guessing that, yeah, because for me, I don't care. I have nothing to prove.
But for young DJs, it is important. It has been an important part of DJing career, let's say, for proving this realness. Meanwhile, in the 90s, there was a certain much more free spirit in the approach to music.
I don't know if it was very free. I remember it to be very, in a way, it was very, everything was so set, you know, everything was in corners. You had a whole nights of techno with no other style of music, only house, only this, only that. It never mixed, and now it's much more open, I think, in clubs, what is being played, you know. It's yeah, big night in Holland, for instance, was called Strictly Techno, so that nothing else is allowed. But that's the atmosphere of the 90s. You go to this kind of music, you spend 8 hours listening to it, and if they play one other track, you walk out, because you... Or, wow. Well, maybe it's exaggerating, but there were all... These parties were very single-minded always. And I think that these days, the genres and stuff don't mean much. Not as much as they used to, you know. Even in the 90s it was already less, but in the 80s it was very, for your identity, very important to align yourself with a certain style of music, and that way also put yourself outside of the other ones, because then you still had like punks and discos and, you know, all these social groups, youth cultures, subcultures, and in the 90s that was a little bit less, but still... music was very much in, it was in one style always, you know.
I recently watched a movie, rewatched a movie called Existence.
Oh, yeah.
From David Cronenberg.
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's almost like a remake of Videodrome with Long Live the New Flesh.
Yeah.
Alexa Geller.
Yeah, the game god, the new game, and the players not sensing reality, what it is.
Yeah, that's typical Cronenberg mixing.
I found interesting about the movie, again, after seeing it after 10 to 12 years, that as a player in the game, you were not free to do what you want.
Yeah,
there was certain...
It was before Grand Theft Auto, when you had free roaming mode, you know?
Exactly.
It was still the days of, I don't know, whatever.
It's like Half-Life. Free will was like solely like a glue for a narrative that is already written.
Yeah, but that's the 90s wave games, you know? I mean, the first-person shooters and the first ones, they were on the rails, so to say. You cannot wander around. That changed, I think, later on, when also it has to do with computer power, of course, because it was technically impossible to make games where you could just do whatever you want and play them in 20 different...
But if you apply it to real life...
Yeah.
Could we say... Could I make a statement that today's...
You can make a statement.
electronic producer has a really set path for him.
These days?
Yeah. Is there any space for innovation?
There's always space. I mean, there's always been space, but there's always only been very few people that see that space and take it. But that's because it's very difficult. There's always been space for great art. it's always been there, but it's always been limited to a very select group of people. And sometimes when it, at the moment it exists, you feel like, wow, of course it should exist, but somebody had to call it into being or whatever, you know. But yeah, I mean, it might seem, I don't know.
Because I think what in the 90s, it was really important to be innovative, genuine. But now I don't see the word innovative.
But it's just a word, because
groundbreaking.
I think, like, for instance, let's say lots of music styles in the 90s, like say drum and bass, for instance, we had this mouthful of future and this and that. But in the end, it was just template music, you know. It was also not the freshness of the beginning of, like, basically any music style, also like the Chicago house, the early Detroit stuff, the first waves of scenes of music that there are no rules, you know, that was already gone, you know. They can say that, but they don't practice it because it's very myopic, like the, you know, tunnel vision. And that happens a lot also with house music and other stuff. But there's always people working on the fringes to create something not necessarily new, because that is also not important, but something that is genuine or their own, you know, like
something that someone would like to steal or sample someday.
Yeah, but that I know. Yeah, possibly, yeah, remix. But I mean, there's people that are, and that's always been, I think, one of the traits of a good artist is that they are free to create kind of what they want. That's basically the main thing, but also free from themselves and their egos and what they think other people want them to do. And it's just it's a very, well, I guess, lonely, selfish thing. Not selfish in a bad way, but it's very personal. You know, like a personal thing. So
intimate.
But that's always there.
Talking about freedom, you have seen the squad scene in Holland grow?
Not really grow, because in the peak time of, or the, in the peak of the squad scene, like the early 80s, I was living with my parents as a kid, you know.
So it started in the 80s already?
Yeah, the squad scene, it started in the 70s, more or less. It started in
along
the 70s.
With Christiania in Denmark and such places with
I don't know
hippies?
If it was like that. Yeah, it started with hippies, kind of hippies. But 70s, it weren't really hippies anymore, I guess, you know, not the traditional ones at least. And then it became big, it blew up. I'm not exactly sure, but like I guess late 70s it really blew up, and in the early 80s it was a massive movement. That also became at that point a bit fragmented. Part was really politicized, other parts were this and that, and it became a bit more violent, I guess. And there were big riots also in Holland those days.
When did squatting become a context for electronic dance music in Holland?
I don't know, and it's hard to say, because I don't know if it really ever did. It was just a place where that's low level, where people can do what they want without restrictions. The practical restrictions of normal, let's say, clubs and stuff, because you don't have to hire a club. You know, normally you don't really have, you can do something low level yourself, and it leads to whatever, you know. It's just any kind of activity that people just want to do, and some work better than others. But I think a big input in the scene was in the early 90s when Bunker Records started doing their the Acid Planet parties, at least in our side of the world, the Acid Planet parties, and then also the British people. There was a big wave of British people coming to Holland in this specific area where we are, because
why?
Well, they could. There was a large
because
amount
of the
seasonal work. For one thing, you could work in the flower industry, because we live right next to that. So you can basically, it's like seasonal, and you can make a lot of money, because you just get paid for what you do, and you can have bonuses and whatever. It's just like peeling flowers or doing this and that, just manual labor, but it's quite high paid, just because you don't get an hourly wage, but based on what you do. So And also because of the laws in the UK, where they had the, what was it, the Criminal Justice Bill, I guess.
It was 1992, I think.
Yeah,
when after the big rave in
there was
a
ban
like
on repetitive music in the UK. And that kind of led to us, I guess there were refugees, you know, and the Spiral Tribe people came to Holland and they hooked up with the Bunker people. And yeah, it was. Yeah, I lived kind of for a while. They kind of also stayed in our building, and I just remember those days as with very mixed feelings because, we had a very different idea of what we wanted to do with the places that we lived in. The British people, it was all about party. It was very cannibalistic for their living spaces. But I guess it's also a different mentality because in the UK, people technically couldn't squat, so once they had something, they just
smashed it.
Just make the most out of it and then leave, you know? So it's like slash and burn kind of. And in Holland it was different. You can actually, if you have a nice place, you can sometimes stay there for 20 years or get it legalized or whatever, you know? So there was a clash with that. And also pretty soon it became there was of course lots of drugs involved, and it became very
violence?
Messy, very quickly.
One guy smashed the turntable.
Yeah, but
with the baseball bat.
That's an anecdote, you know. Okay. I mean, it is of course a violent act, but it was in the squat where we lived. It was different floors. It was a tower block, kind of. What's that book? High rise, Ballard style. To go back a bit, also to Cronenberg. Yeah, he did Shivers too, right? That's a Ballard book. Mm. Anyway, it's like an apartment. It was an 11-story high old university building that was squatted, and there were different floors that were all kind of separated from each other, and there was one floor that was constant fucking parties and stuff. And yeah, so you sleep in...
Sounds great.
No, it was not, because it's like a concrete like 60s
no,
building,
just
you know. Like, so yeah, at some point somebody just, you know, after asking a few times if they could keep it down, it had been going for weeks, just walked up and threw a slab of concrete on the turntables and just walked down again and went to bed. And it was a quiet night for him.
In September we've had Ben UFO in the studio talking about his DJ sets,
mm-hmm.
And sets in the club. And basically what he said was, I think, if I remember correctly, that he did not make a difference between his radio sets and his live DJing. You also have a radio show.
Yeah, I used to. I did one for 2 years, and this year it was on the lower level because it's a lot of work. But next year I'm gonna start one again with Lego Bell together. Mm-hmm. We're gonna do a new show. Yeah, on IFM. But we are thinking of a new concept, and we're trying to like get a show going that we both do an hour, but it still connects. You know, we don't necessarily have to do it together, but it will be a connected show. But yeah, I did a show for 2 years there weekly.
Did you approach differently to the show?
Well, for me, what I like about radio is that it has much more space for weird music, the talking. And I'm personally not interested in listening to a DJ mix on a radio or just a collection of tracks, because you can make a playlist and shuffle your iTunes or any kind of thing you want, and that has the same result. So I like more talking. It's cool, or weird stuff, stupid, silly things, you know.
Horror soundtracks.
Yeah, but also like interviews or fact of the week, you know. Whatever kind of things that make radio radio. I mean, if I want a continuous stream of music, I'm very I guess I just play my own shit, you know. I don't need to listen to somebody's DJ mix on the radio, or I like to really have a choice in what I listen to. And when I listen to radio, I want to be surprised, but also by talking.
Radio has must have changed its function since the rise of internet.
I don't know
and
exactly.
And the MP3 culture.
Yeah, maybe, but it's the way people approach it. I think for me also on IFM, and I noticed there also, I think the shows that work best, the moments that listen to the most is when people do their shows and they, you know, they talk or something, or when we are there in the studio and we do like a demo contest and there's interaction with people in the public, or it's like a top 100 or, you know, something that is involves people, and it is not only music, because that still is a very lonely sort of separate thing, you know. I mean, it's not that it's so bad, but I mean you kind of like, yeah, you can listen to music anytime anywhere these days, and why would you do that on the radio? You know, I mean, something like this like this evening would for me be much more interesting to listen to than just this mixtape being played, for instance.
Mm-hmm. We've played your mixtape
that's great. I'm honored. And I'm glad you listened to it, if you did, but or taxi drivers out there.
Yeah, taxi drivers do listen to it.
I got a lot of emails from taxi drivers here, like, hey, what's that track at 20 minutes? I had to run a red light. But
did they ask, is it coming on our zone?
The taxi drivers, yeah, they're very much into that.
Our zone is your new project.
Yeah, that's new a label. New project that's coming. Finally, I wouldn't say. I mean, it's strategically, it's better to start it in the new year now. But it's been cooking for a while, and it's going to be a new label, sub label.
Of
sort
Krem.
Of, yeah, but also.
Yeah, also have you also have two sub labels actually of Krem, right?
Yeah, Krem Jack, I killed that.
You killed
this
it.
Year, that's over. Yeah,
yeah, I've
noticed. And Krem Eclipse is basically, that's kind of, yeah, it's been going since the beginning. And every now and then, it's just for stuff that I can't really, yeah, like more
Category.
Darker electro or like wave stuff, or a bit more left field, I think. But,
so, what can we expect from Krem and DJ TLR in 2013?
Well, I have already got 15 releases. They're finished, basically. They just need to be released, and that's it. And then probably there will be new stuff, I hope. But it always happens. So, and a new label and a new radio show. And hopefully, if the gods allow it, I still can DJ, but that's up to people to book me, you know. I have no control over that, but it's looking okay for next year already. There's a bunch of good things coming up, and I would say more of the same, but it always changes a bit because it's parallel with my personal interests and tastes at the time, so hopefully I won't go crazy and alienate everybody too much, but
it's like
it's my journey, and I hope people want to come along with it.
Why not?
Or stay on the train, I don't know.
Cool. Mr. Van der Star, I would like to thank you
for
this
welcome.
Interview, for your music, and also I would like to invite all the listeners of Radio Student to go check you out today in Club K4. Hvala za poslušanje. Poslušajte Radio Student še naprej na frekvenci 89,3 MHz. Z vami smo bili 359 za reglerji, GTLR za mikrofonom in za vprašanje Dino.
Intervju Radija Študent.